How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvers and Dave Meltzer here on Wrestling Observer Radio. It is Wednesday, April 30th, 2014. Figure4online.com/WrestlingObserver.com. Chael Sonnen is here on the line, and we got a lot of stuff to talk about here today. Chael, how you doing?
Good, man. What's going on, guys?
I just watched a video that Vanderlei apparently put together. That's the story. It's a very professional video. And you would think that you both would be running for office. He's got all of these clips of you. He's trying to paint you as a racist. He goes on this crazy rant. Obviously, there's a story behind this. What's going on with Vanderlei? Why is this video necessary?
You know, I've heard of the video. I haven't seen it. I will see it at some point today. In fact, it's been sent to me. I just haven't had time to watch it yet. And you know, I don't know. When a guy's trying to make videos of you, I don't know what to make of it. I suppose if I had a response, I would say I'm flattered. And if he ever does something interesting, I'll return the favor and make a video of him.
I mean, one of the things that that I found out, you know, when we talked, and then after and watching that episode, I was really curious as far as, you know, like what was the reaction in Brazil? Because when I watched the show, I mean, the thing that was, you came off as, I mean, very, very sympathetic, especially when Job had to leave the show because of, I think it was a hand injury. And I mean, I watch and I go like, you know, I know I'm watching this with American eyes. And I think that, you know, Chael and Hortensia are just coming off really, really good the way the cameras look. And Vanderlei, not so good, especially with the fight scene and the way with Dita on his team and all that.
Sure.
And I was thinking, like, how would a Brazilian think that, you know, think of all this? And so as it turned out, me and Brian talked about it on our show, and a couple of guys from Brazil emailed me, one guy in particular, and gave me a big, long thing about how there was a poll on one of the Brazilian sports sites that 70% of the people said that they would rather Chael won the fight than Vanderlei. Now, he said if the fight actually was held in Brazil because of the nationalism, the night of the fight, he did believe that people would have cheered Vanderlei, but he said that, like, the super hardcore fans still like Vanderlei because he represents, you know, that old pride thing. And
right.
He said the casual fan, the casual audience watching on television, the millions, they're very sympathetic to you now.
Yeah, I think that could be the case. I heard about that poll, and it's kind of hard for us to understand. You know, we do polls all over America. You put a poll up on Facebook and read the results. But, geez, they had over 100,000 people vote. And, you know, that's just the power of the sport and the media outlet that actually decided to do this poll. It was this overwhelming response, and I was surprised by the numbers too. And I think that assessment is right, that if we fought in Brazil, I would most definitely be booed and he would be cheered, which would be fine. But that's just the loyalty that they are as fans. But it's driving him insane. It's just driving him insane that the fans are having this response. And it's almost as though he wants me to do something about it, to fix this, to flip the roles back, which I was happy to do throughout the entire show. I was happy, you know, to make him the face and keep myself the heel. He's the one that flipped everything, and there's no going back.
You've made it very clear that you've tried to explain this to him, that we can each play this role. You can be the good guy in your country. I have no problem with people throwing beer and nachos at me, I believe is how you put it. What do you make?
Well remembered, Ryan. Well remembered.
That's right. What do you make of Vanderlei's attitude towards you?
You know, it's really tough to make out. I think he's just being himself, and I'm just being myself. And that's the one thing with reality TV. To put on any type of a character is so exhausting, and it's got to be done. And as you guys know better than anybody, it's got to be done in 30-second spots. You know, if a guy does a long shoot, that's 3 minutes. To make believe that you're going to be able to stay in character, I mean, even Brad Pitt couldn't do it for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 60 days in a row. It just can't be done. So in the final analysis, I got to drop the act. I'm who I am. He's got to drop the gig. He is who he is. They film it and put it out there, and that's it, you know. And it's not all bad news for him. Like you said, he did get 30% of the vote, which when over 100,000 people vote, means he's got 30,000 people on the side. It's not all bad news, but I really think he could have stayed more on script, and you know, who knows? Maybe it would have been an even better show.
Now, he, I know that he's doing a lot of blaming of the editing process of the show, which, I mean, I guess everyone does that when they, when they're portrayed not well on Ultimate Fighter. I think from, you know, from Ken Shamrock to Ronda Rousey, I think that that's been a common theme. But I mean, I know that he did, you know, he did, he said that in the, in an interview the other day as well.
Yeah, and I don't know. I suppose maybe only he would know that. I can tell you, I've had a couple of experiences with it now, and it's been real straight. You know, every now and then you don't get every word in that you wanted. That is the truth in editing. You know, a guy goes out and says a paragraph and only a sentence makes it. That is a reality, but that's what editing is. That's the precise definition of editing. So those things could happen. I can't speak to that experience. I can tell you, though, for mine, for better or worse, it was always straight down the middle. And if you know, I guess if he's got another side of it, he's got your phone number. Well, he's welcome to come on and tell a story.
Now, with you, you had mentioned that that your relation, that there was a point in the show where you were very, very frustrated, and I think that you actually wanted to come here and talk to us a little bit about that point in the filming.
Babe, it was crazy, guys. He gives me the silent treatment for 10 days. I mean, he treated me in all these different ways. You know, it was passive aggressive. It was just aggressive. It was just passive. It was angry. It was cordial. I mean, I had all these different. Every day when I show up, I got to take his temperature. You know, at some point we're going to see each other. And I don't know what mood he's going to be in. Every now and then, you know, he'd walk right past me. And that was a good day when there was no interaction at all. You know, no shoulder bump, no scowls. I can say, oh, good, he's in a good mood today. And then there was the other side where I'd walk in a room, he'd know I was coming in, I wouldn't know he was, and he'd put his mouthpiece in, as though you know, we're just about to fight. And at any rate, he gives me a 10-day silent treatment. And 10 days of a 58-day filming is very significant. That's a very significant percentage of time. And to say that he was ruining the show might be a little extreme, but he definitely ruined that element of it. The interaction between he and I is an element of the show that's important. Whether our interaction is good, bad, or indifferent, there still needs to be an interaction amongst the coaches. That's what makes this show kind of neat. You know, in the NFL or NBA, you don't really get that between the coaches. They stand on the other side of the court. So it's an important factor. And he gives me, like, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to handle this. At the same time that I'm getting a silent treatment, while I'm cognizant that we're making TV that ultimately needs viewers, at the same time that that's going on, you guys have to understand, is the same time that I'm losing my grip on my character of the heel. I can feel that it's slipping. I can feel that he's being aggressive, that he's skipping practices, that he's out partying. I can feel he's becoming what I was supposed to be. And now I'm lost, because I've played every scenario through in my head all day long. When I'm out driving around, I'm thinking of different scenarios. I'm thinking of different questions somebody may ask me. I'm constantly prepared for this type of atmosphere. He was doing stuff that I never envisioned. So anyway, I'm making a really short story long, but the point is, I'm beat. I don't know what to do. I don't know how to overcome this. And I don't know if this 10-day silent treatment is going to turn into a 50-day silent. I don't know if he's ever going to speak to me. So I'm in Brazil. I can't get a hold of anybody. As you know, Dave, I contacted you from Brazil. I had to do it by email. I didn't have a phone over there. So I got to go out. I got to get an international phone. I got to figure out how this darn thing works. And I call Paul Heyman. And I swear him to secrecy, because I'm not allowed legally to tell him anything about the show. And I'm like, hey, man, I got to swear you to secrecy here, and I got to tell you what's going on. So he's like, lay it on me. And I told him what was up. And he said, listen, the way I would handle this, he says, you've got to shoot on him. He said, you can't, if he's not playing on, you're not playing along, then you got to just drop everything and shoot on him. And he worded it a lot more aggressively than that, and then he laid out what he would do. He said, here's the points that I would hit on. You know, drop everything, come clean, which is what a shoot is. And you know, and Paul got a lot more into detail than that. He took a considerable amount of time and care into this. But that's, you know, in many ways, Paul Heyman saved the Ultimate Fighter 3. A lot of people A lot of people don't know that story. In fact, nobody does. That's the first time that I've told it. And he kept his word and kept his secrecy up. But that's the deal, man. In many ways, Paul saved the day.
So can we blame Paul for the brawl that broke out on the set?
Yes. You know what, Brian? Man. Yes, that's exactly what we should do. Not only should we thank Paul for the huge ratings he's getting, but we should also blame him for all of the bad things that happened.
Yes, all of this out-of-control behavior by Chael.
That's exactly right. I like how your mind's working on that.
Well, let me ask you this about that brawl. So, last time you were on the show, I believe that we knew that the date of the match had been announced, but if I recall correctly, you weren't entirely sure that he'd signed yet. Right now, can you tell us decisively this fight is signed, sealed, and delivered on both sides?
No, I cannot.
Oh, my.
But I do have a piece of good news. On that day, yeah, he hadn't signed, and there was some stuff that was just fishy about it. Like, for example, he wasn't working out. He'd been off for a considerable amount of time. Excuse me, when we were first scheduled to fight, it was a main event. And there's a real relevance there because that means it's five rounds. And the human body isn't meant for five rounds. I mean, you really gotta prepare and plan for that. And he just wasn't. At any rate, right now, no, I don't know that it's signed, but I'm quite sure it is going to happen. As a matter of fact, I'm in Orange County as I talk to you right now. I'm out training with Mark Munoz at the Reign Training Center. Vanderlei's right up the road. With Master Rafael Cadero. He's at King's MMA. So he's in town training for something. I have to assume it's me.
So did you ever get like a good explanation as to why he was refusing to sign this paper?
No, I didn't. It was a moving target, and it was a moving target for our leadership at the UFC as well, where they were just having a hard time pinning it down. Vanderlei, what do we need to do? And the rules kept changing. First, he had to have a main event. He had to have 25 minutes to beat me up. And then all of a sudden, well, it's got to be in Brazil. He's got to come to Brazil. And it just kept changing. And again, our leadership, we got the master promoter, did everything, agreed to absolutely every stipulation. And then ultimately came a crazy dollar figure, of which our leadership signed off on again. It was almost an ultimate warrior situation, rest his soul, but it's a well-known story where he turns a gun on Vince. I think it was at a Survivor Series. It was the Royal Rumble.
I could tell you a lot more about that story, but it was actually 7 weeks before, but Vince remembers it as being like that afternoon and the day before.
I heard Vince tell it. It was like the day of, but okay.
Sure.
A little different, but...
the basic...
To answer your question, though, Brian, it just kept being a moving target, and ultimately, I think it's set for July 5th.
Well, did anything, here's the big question, did anything change before and immediately after the brawl in the sense of, do you get the feeling that maybe this guy was all ready to go, and then you guys have this brief brawl, and for everybody that saw it, I mean, he takes a wild swing, and you took him down before a person could blink. And do you think that maybe when this happened, he was kind of like, man, this sucks?
I think that there's some truth to that. My feeling going into it was already a little shaky. And my one and only piece of evidence was he wasn't working out. And above everything, the set of The Ultimate Fighter is the finest mixed martial arts gym you're going to see. I mean, it's top dollar, top quality, every piece of equipment. You're just not going to miss that chance to train. And he was, but, I think that's right. That fight broke out and I know after I felt him, I was surprised. I was surprised that, he was a little smaller than I thought he was. He was a little weaker. He was a little slower. And he might have been surprised the other way. There might be some truth to that.
At the same time, you're going to get someone who's a lot more prepared. A 20-second thing like that isn't the same thing as a fight where you're starting and you've trained for weeks and weeks and whatever shape he was in there, most likely he's going to be in completely different shape on the day of the fight.
Yeah, unfortunately. Unfortunately, you are right. No matter how this goes down, it does not go down in a 30-second match for either one of us. We're both going to have to go out and work hard. I mean, you know, I could tease Vanderlei all I want, but I'm not delusional. You know, the guy's got tremendous heart. He stays in there and battles, and he hits extremely hard, particularly early. It's a little wild, and you can complain about that, but if the shot lands, you know, I'm not above being in trouble. So,
I got a couple questions. Number one, when you talk about what caused you to reach out to, of all the 6 billion people on Earth, Paul Heyman? Not that that was a bad choice, because perhaps in the same situation, he might have been the guy I would call.
Who's he going to reach out to? Vince Russo?
Yeah. You know, there's a couple of reasons. One, it's just a respect for Paul. Two, I'm very familiar with him. I know what he's done. I've never had the pleasure to meet him, but I feel like I know him. Three, he's a little bit older, and I just really felt I could trust him. You know, you got to understand, I'm breaking a confidentiality agreement. I take those very serious, but I think you would agree there were some circumstances where I was jammed up and I had to make an executive decision. You know, I'm in a different country. It's not as though I can just reach out to the guys in Vegas. On some level, I am the representative, and I've got to have the freedom to make some decisions. So Paul was a guy, even without knowing him, I just knew I could trust. You know, we've got mutual friends, whether it be Brock Lesnar or CM Punk. And I also know that he's an expert in psychology. And I was jammed up. I was stuck. I'm working through this spot. I couldn't figure out how to deal with this. You know, one, him not talking to me, but two, the reversal of roles was, I just didn't see it coming.
Another thing, you had actually touched on this very briefly earlier in this conversation, but it was something that a couple of years ago, you and I just bumped into each other in Vegas, and it was the conversation was about the idea of a 5-round fight, and you were just like, you know, again, I think fans watching, you know, always think, oh, you know, 5-round fight's going to be better than a 3-round fight because it's longer, and it can be more dramatic. And fighters usually, like, if you ask them about 5 versus 3, they'll always go, oh, good question, but it doesn't seem like that it's something that people really talk about, in the sense that if you're going to go the distance, and working, you know, or fighting the fight in 5 versus 3, it's actually a really big difference. Because I think one of the things is, you know, a wrestling match, which you came from and which a lot of the guys came from, it's 7 minutes, and now you're talking about 25 minutes with you know, very little stoppage. It's not like it's a tournament where you've got a couple hours between, and maybe you might
sure.
25 minutes a day. So what, you know, kind of explain to the average person, you know, again, you're doing 3 rounds instead of 5 this time.
Yeah, you know, I've been shocked at the success that the UFC's found with 5 rounds. When that first announcement came out, my initial prediction was, this isn't going to last. And the reason I had it, I just thought it was going to backfire. You know, again, the human body just isn't made for that. These are really super superb and dedicated athletes, and we're throwing some heavyweights in there that are having to do it. And, you know, for a heavyweight, it's hard to do anything. It's hard to jog for 25 straight minutes. You know, imagine being in that environment, and they pulled it off. They pulled it off. Some of the greatest and most fun men, you know, Bigfoot Silva versus Mark Hunt comes to mind as we're talking about right. heavyweights in 5 rounds. But, you know, guys, here's the thing in boxing, and commentators have lied and misled the public for years. In boxing, they'll always talk about a feeling out process. Okay, and round 3 is done. It looks like they're still feeling each other out. But it's not true. What's going on out there is the athletes are walking out, and they both know, look, I can't go 36 minutes, or right, 12 rounds or 3 minutes. I can't go 36 minutes, and neither can you. So let's just circle for the first 9 to 12 minutes, and then we'll get after it, and then we'll commence to circling. You don't see this feeling out process in amateur boxing. At the Olympic level, they're coming out and they're going after it. And that has nothing to do with the headgear or the size of the glove. It has to do with the fact that it's 3-3s. And if MMA went the other way, I do agree that the 5 rounds did end up working out, surprisingly. But I would also argue, gentlemen, that we would have had just as much excitement, if not more, had we gone the other way. Had we made it 3 3-minute rounds or 3 4-minute rounds, that we would see a nonstop spread. That whole feeling out process is not true, and it was never true in boxing. It was just an unwritten agreement between the two athletes that were in the same boat of going, look, we just simply can't do it this long.
You know, you mentioned a couple of days ago about Andre Dita, who ended up being fired from the show after the brawl, that based on where you were in this building here, he could have grabbed a 35-pound plate, for example, and waffled you with it.
Yeah.
This is a very dangerous situation. Do you feel that his punishment, which was merely to be fired, fit the crime?
But this was not good. Here's what I don't want to do. I don't want to be a martyr in a situation and build this up. But at the same time, I do have a responsibility for other people to watch. Look, this isn't okay. And oftentimes when it's thrown on TV, we dismiss it. Or we'll go, it was just television. You know, look, this was an assault that was caught on tape. And it was very dangerous what he did. And I came out of it and all that neat stuff. But, you know, not for nothing, that's a professional fighter. And not only that, he does striking arts. He competes in kickboxing over in the K-1. And he had no glove on. And it was a dangerous situation. So the punishment fit the crime. Look, it might have been a little bit light, but ultimately, I think it's my call. I think it's up to me whether he should be forgiven or not. And I chose to forgive him. If he was here right now, it wouldn't kill him to throw me an apology. But if he did, I would accept it. And I'd shake his hand and we'd leave it at that.
As far as like the whatever ramifications came off of the thing, because, you know, Vanderlei said that, you know, he hurt his hand. In fact, on the show, they showed him after the thing, you know, getting his hand all wrapped up. And he said that he hurt his back when you took him down. And that's the reason that the fight was delayed. I mean, as far as, you know, from getting those sucker shots from Dita, I mean, were you shaken up or you were bleeding. I mean, we could see that. I mean, how badly shaken up were you by all that?
You know, I felt like I was okay, but I had some guys tell me the next day that, you know, we did the fight or whatever, and I had a dialogue with some guys, including one guy in production. The next day he told me that dialogue that I was having wasn't completely coherent. And apparently the next day I came in and told him a story. And I said, hey, that was a pretty good story I just told you. I'm not getting much of a reaction from you. And he goes, well, the problem is you told me it yesterday. Mm. So I think, you know, I think maybe I took some lumps a little harder than I had fully understood. But, you know, again, it was one of those things. I didn't have to go to the hospital. I think I went home. I got a good night's sleep. But my head was sore and had some lumps, and that's just the reality. So, yeah, it was a tough day at work for sure. But, you know, again, he got kicked off the show, and I do feel, you know, particularly in this country, somebody does something wrong, we punish them, but we only punish them once. We don't wait outside of prison and throw rocks at guys. Once they serve their time, they serve their time. His punishment was handed down. He served it. We're good.
Now, you are obviously in training for this fight, and you have mentioned that you're starting to feel a little bit better. You're having to no longer, the testosterone replacement therapy has been banned, and I presume you're not going to give us details, but you've got some new ideas that seem to be helping. Is that correct?
Yeah, and I'm not terribly against details, but if I did discover something where I'm like, oh my gosh, this is, you know, the fountain of youth or however, I think that I would want to keep that to myself. That'd be a competitive edge like anything else. But, yeah, I have had some real positive, and I've been working with somebody very interesting. It's a coach. His name is Sam Calavita. In fact, for four, you know what, it might even be five times, he was elected Teacher of the Year in the state of California. He's a mathematician. I believe he even has his PhD in mathematics. He's not a doctor of any kind, you know, a medical doctor, but he breaks things down by the numbers, and he's got some very scientific formulas based on everything from age, weight, metabolic rate, height, and he has beliefs that he can, you know, adjust a person's hormones and adjust a person's body from the inside out as opposed to the outside in. And I've been listening to him. I've been trusting with him. He runs a lot of numbers. We did VO2 max and some very scientific stuff, you know, sleeping with heart rate monitors, just some different stuff that he can then punch into a computer, literally punch out a formula that he's got. And, you know, we've up some stuff that would really surprise you all the way down to fish oils. the upping the amount that I was taking, and we've got a specific recipe, how many calories in a day in, how many calories out, what part of that is protein. And then he also has a lifting program. And I've read a lot about this. I've read a lot that there is specific ways that you can lift weights that will force your body to release testosterone. I have read about that, and he supports that. The problem is that type of lifting is the opposite of what any MMA guy would do. For example, if an MMA guy lifts weights at all, and it's pretty rare, it would be a lightweight for a very high amount of reps, 25, 30, 35 times. He's the opposite. It's a ton of weight for anywhere from 4 to 6 reps. But there is scientific data that it will force your body to release testosterone. And so, you know, we've also been doing that. And I know that sounds like a lot of stuff I'm throwing at you, but there is ways to up your testosterone. They're just hard and they require a lot of discipline. The easy way is to take it and just shoot it into your leg. But we can't do that anymore.
Well, this is maybe a mistranslation, but if I have read this correctly, Vitor Belfort has simply asked God.
You know, our president, Dana White, was asked about that. And our president, who has no poker face and just tells things the way it is, said not only did he find that hilarious, but he found that ridiculous. And
that's a strong accusation.
Good for Vitor. I think Vitor will come through this. I think that Vitor is so bad at PR that he makes every situation far worse than it needs to be.
I know some MMA fans aren't going to want to hear this, but I just want to get your opinion on this. Obviously, mixed martial arts, UFC, I mean, this is a real fight all the way across the board. And your everything that happened on Ultimate Fighter, your fight with Vanderlei, it's going to be a real fight. This is not professional wrestling. However,
sure,
you have noted on this program that, in your opinion, the man who saved Ultimate Fighter was Paul Heyman. Do you think there would be a benefit to UFC hiring a very smart professional wrestling mind just to kind of help some of these guys figure out what this game is supposed to be going into fights?
There's a very fine line. And, Dana White understands not only fighting, but the fight business. And I think we can all concede that he is the single greatest mind and the single greatest visionary the combat sports has ever seen. He certainly trumps Don King and Bob Arum, and those guys have done a great job, even Oscar De La Hoya. Those guys are great at what they do. They're not Dana. The one thing that Dana is cognizant of is that this needs to be straight. This needs to be straightforward. I don't want fake interviews. He hates it when guys come out to weigh-ins wearing sunglasses or anything to draw attention to them aside from just their skills and their real opinion. So, yes, I get your point. I don't disagree with it. I do think that it would be helpful. I think there's a psychology that is greatly missed. There's a psychology that's understood in professional wrestling, not an interview process. There's a psychology that the wrestlers understand that the fighters do not. The problem with bringing in one of those names, a Jim Ross, a Paul Heyman, is it may begin to give the appearance that things are less than straightforward. And in MMA, it has to be a shoot. And I do a lot of gimmicky things myself, and even I don't like them. I'm straightforward. This has to be real. Don't sell me anything. Boxing's been selling for years. It just is what it is, and we still all tune in. But I know our president doesn't like it and really, really wants to stay away from that.
I understand what you're saying, but at the same time, I'm pretty sure that Dana would prefer something in an interview other than I'll fight whoever you put in front of me.
No, it's not about the real or fake, but more about the mentality of the guys.
Sure.
When you're given an interview, when you're given interview time, think of your career and where you want your career to go. Don't start telling stories or becoming. I mean, like, let's face it, Nick Diaz is as real as it gets, and you could never be Nick Diaz, but he's phenomenal at what he is because look at the interest that he gathers for his fights.
You don't even have to take a pro wrestling guy. You don't have to give a pro wrestling guy this job. I just threw it out because a smart pro wrestling guy should be able to help everybody with this process of not going out there and wasting your time when somebody puts a mic in front of your face and you've got millions of people watching you.
Guys, you're spot on, and I know exactly what you're asking and what you're saying, and I fully agree. You know, I wish that some of these MMA guys would pay attention, and you know, they don't even have to pay attention to me. A lot of guys do, a lot of guys copy. I get that, but, you know, the best is Dana White. That's the guy I copy. You know, that's the guy that I watch and study and go copy. Nobody asked Dana a question. Hey, who's Lyoto Machida going to fight next? Oh, you know, I don't know. Whoever we want him to. Yeah. Like, no, he doesn't. He's going to give you an answer. You know, he's not going to give you a yes, no, a thanks, a maybe. He's going to go out and talk and create some interest and give an answer. And that's what promotion's about. And I think of our guys, if we could just get them there, if we could just get them that far, it would be beneficial. But, you know, you're right. The guys think that that's the right thing to say. Oh, I'm a good company man. Well, listen, part of being a company is seeing the cracks and filling them in. You know, don't be afraid to do a matchmaker's job for him. You know, the matchmaker could use a night off like anybody else. You know, you want to go help him. He's not going to be offended by that. He's going to be appreciative. And, you know, no matter how many times I do it or call my own fights or get them set just the way that I envision, only a few guys pay attention, copy that, and do it for themselves. And the rest just are missing the boat. There's guys that will listen to this interview right now and not understand what I'm even saying. And that's just the unfortunate reality that we deal with a lot of times in combat sports.
Do you think some of that, I mean, like, because this is your background, I mean, because a lot of the guys that I've sometimes been frustrated with, in the sense that they're in their shell and you talk to them about it and, you know, about the same subject, and because they came from that amateur wrestling background, they perceive, you know, anything as being like, I don't want to say selling out their amateur background, because it's not quite that, but there's that mentality that you don't disrespect your opponent, which that I sure get, but also the kind of the mentality that, you know, I let my actions do my talking. And unfortunately, like, you know, you, in a professional sport, you really need to do both. You need to let your talking do your talking, and your, of course, if you can't back it up, you can be the greatest, you know, that's when you should be in pro wrestling, essentially.
Sure. You know, I walked that line too, Dave, because ultimately what you're talking about is sportsmanship. What is sportsmanship and what is unsportsmanlike? I mean, that's ultimately what this comes down to. And from day one with kids, and I coach a kids team, I preach sportsmanship on almost a daily basis. At least a couple of times a week, that actual word comes up. It comes up with, you know, how you behave when you walk onto the mat, win or lose, how you behave walking off the mat, that you always go over and shake the opposing coach's hand, you look him in the eye, you don't just slap his hand and walk off. And sportsmanship is important. However, in large part, that is for youth, and that is for kids, and that is for amateur athletics. As you get into professional sports, you know, you're also in the entertainment business. And it's not unsportsmanlike to be a sportsman and to be a showman. You know, I think that there's some rules that need to be followed, and there's some guidelines, and part of it is showing up. You know, say whatever you want as long as you make that walk on the agreed upon date. These are my own rules. I don't know that people have to follow these, but ultimately what you're talking about is sportsmanship. And the truth is, on the professional level, you know, we're now in the sports business. We're not just in sports, and I do think that there's some more freedoms.
Now, before we go, you have sent out some interesting tweets of late and made references to Rich Franklin. I know we don't want to look too far past the Vanderlei Silva fight, but you have made it clear that if Mr. Franklin wants one last fight, you would be happy to give it to him.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and here's the deal, and I've been around Rich, and that guy's been nothing but a gentleman, not only to me, but I've observed him with other people. But when he was the world champion, you know, all the way back in 2002, 2003, I'd have whipped his ass back then. I just couldn't get my shot. The same thing goes with Vanderlei Silva. This isn't a grudge match from 2014. This is back from his Pride days when I'm sitting on my living room and can't get to the organization. And I'm going, man, I'll kick this guy's ass. I was the best middleweight temper. I would have held that belt longer than anybody did. I just couldn't get my I couldn't even get in the organization. So I'm fighting the top middleweights in the world in some of the regional shows, and I was jealous. I mean, ultimately, that's what it came down to. And if anybody disputes that I'm the best middleweight there's ever been, then please, let me go retroactively. Let me go retroactively, and I'll beat every single one of these guys that came before me and got their opportunities. Rich Franklin only has one fight left. And if he or anybody disputes that I would have been the champion way back then give me the fight, and I will show you where I stand amongst the middleweights.
One question I have, and this is absolutely not really related to you as much as the sport itself. I know you work real hard as an analyst. All the guys, you know, I think one of the things with the UFC is you know, you and Brian Stann and others, Munoz. I mean, they really do a great Dominic Cruz. I don't want to leave him out for sure. You know, they do a great job with analyzing fights, breaking down fights. Who are guys that the fans that are listening right now need to look out for as far as the future of you know, UFC? I mean, you know, maybe not like the Henin Barraos that are already awesome, but maybe need a bigger name. But, you know, guys that maybe you've seen, maybe even not in UFC today, or just guys that you've seen in prelims in UFC where you just go, I think this guy, you know, in 2-3 years is someone we need to watch out for.
Yeah, you know, and there's some pretty good guys. There's a guy I'm very big on. I think his skills are really good. His heart is tremendous. He's got the look. He's fun to watch the whole bit. It's a guy named Dennis Bermudez.
Oh, yeah.
He's actually, guys, he's actually on a 6-fight win streak, which is incredible. They weren't necessarily the top of the food chain. He's got to work his way to that name-wise, but I think the guys he fought were all very good. At the end of the day, 6 fights in a row in the UFC that's a crazy number, because now you're spanning over a year. You know, to get 6 fights takes over 2 years. So for years, he's been unbeaten. There's another guy that I'm big on, and he's had a couple of bumps in the road. He missed weight, and then he took a loss, but a guy named Diego Brandão out of Jackson's camp. And then ultimately, I'll leave names out. I'll just bring a whole nation into it. There's a Russian invasion coming, and it's coming very quickly. And everybody knew in MMA, and everybody knows in any other sport, that when the Russians decide to play, they're playing for keeps, and it's always been that way. And in the Olympic Games, whether it's winter or summer, if you go look at the medal count, you're going to understand that the Russian athletics is very important to that government. There's tremendous funding. It's tremendously serious. And, you know, we're starting to see it. Not only is Bagatinov getting a title shot, but Nurmagomedov is, you know, really becoming a star, and rightfully so. And that's just to drop two names. To go on and on with those Russian guys, man. They're coming, and they're coming fast.
Now, before we go, I just wanted to see if there were any other mid-early 2000 middleweights that you'd like to get your hands on. Murillo Bustamante, for example.
I think he's a little long in the tooth.
I don't know. Just seeing if there's anybody else that you really had your eye on.
No, you know what, hey, Brian? Good for you for bringing that name up. You know, I don't. I don't have anyone just because they're not active. Again, once a guy retires, you know, if I find that he's off limits. And like, you know, Rich has one left, and he will be a Hall of Famer. He's a world champion and really carried the company for a number of years. You know, personally, it's got nothing to do with it, but I do have some envy, and I do have resentment. And it dates way back. So I would like to make that right. But no, I can't really think of any middleweights. At one point, I wanted a piece of Frank Shamrock. But again, you know, he's retired and moved on. And that's just part of competitiveness. So I'll settle for Mr. Franklin.
All right. Have you visited his juice bar, by the way? I hear it's pretty good.
You know, I have not. I want to. As a matter of fact, I was berating him on Twitter about a week or so ago, and as soon as I was just waiting for him to respond, and if he did, I was going to march right on down to that juice bar. And I do hear great things. I haven't been there yet, but I will acknowledge some guys that have been there, including Mike Dolce, and they say he's really done a fantastic job.
Well, real quick, tell Mike Dolce is an interesting character. You know, I've talked to him a couple of times, and he kind of reminds he's really upbeat guy. I mean, he's worked with you extensively. You know, what kind of do you get from Mike Dolce besides, working on the diet? I mean, as far as is he a strong motivator? And because that's my impression, is he's really a good motivator as well.
Yeah, he's a motivator. Yeah, I mean, he's a master of his craft all the way down to marketing. You know, he really is a sharp guy that got in on something, got in early. He's made a ton of money. He deserves every cent of it. He's changed people's lives, not only, MMA athletes, but just the average Joe as well. He can help get people in shape. He can motivate them. He can motivate you through a text message. You'd be amazed at a text message you can receive with it from him, and the words and the use of punctuation where, boom, all of a sudden your spirits are up. You know, he's one of those guys that only needs a couple of hours of sleep at night, and he's just ready to go. I got a text message about a month ago from Stone Cold asking me about him and just said, hey, I'm thinking of looking this cat Dolce up. Is he the real deal? I like to, you know, get a few pounds off. And I said, yeah, he's as good as you hear about him. He doesn't pay anybody. These aren't sponsored comments that guys like me go around and make. They're just hard work and well-earned comments. And ultimately, I believe he is working with Stone Cold right now. So, he's really made a niche for himself. He did it really smart, and he deserves the credit.
The fight is July 5th in Las Vegas, Wanderlei Silva versus Chael Sonnen. You can check out their series of Ultimate Fighter on Fight Pass, which is available at UFC.com. Head up there and check that out. And Chael, any other final plugs you'd like to get in here today?
You know, I don't have anything. It's been a good week. It's been a good month, not only for MMA, but on the wrestling side of things. And no, I don't have a whole lot.
All right. Well, I want to thank you so much for doing the show today, and hopefully we'll have you back on before the big fight takes place. Always stuff to talk about. So best of luck with your training and everything. And, of course, thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll talk to you again after a while.